Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The King's Spinster Bride by Ruby Dixon. Narrated by Gillian Macy and Mason Lloyd. 1. 16 years ago. Hala.
I thought Cyclops were supposed to have one eye, not two,
titters one of my attendants.
Are we quite sure that he's Alistair's son?
The other women in the room giggle behind their sewing. I ignore them, gently pushing my needle through my embroidery. The boy in question stands by the castle window, looking out over the city. Eshram is unnaturally quiet this time of day. It's because the walls are manned against the army waiting outside, ready to put us under siege, unless my father, the king, surrenders. My father won't surrender, though. He's too proud. Eshram and all its lands belong to him. He is a good ruler, I think. Fair and wise. Maybe a bit intractable when crossed, but I adore him and hope to rule like him someday. King Galen the Wise. King Galen the Just. King Galen, who stands at the gates of the city, confronting Alistair and his Cyclope warriors. I cannot help but worry, and my stitches are calm but uneven. My father is not a warrior. His hair is snowy white, and while he still stands straight, I know his knees pain him on rainy days. He surrounds himself with scholars, not generals. Alistair's people are not anything like us. I think of the legends I have been told. The Cyclope are utterly fierce and fearless. They have but one eye, stand 7 feet tall, and drink the blood of wolves when they are born. Their mothers do not suckle them, but abandon them to the wild. And when they grow of age, they join Alistair's fierce band. They ride upon the backs of beasts and eat the flesh of their enemies. They are not civilized, not in the slightest. I pretend to keep my eyes on my stitching and let my gaze slide over to the boy that stares out the window, his hands on his little belt. Mathior has been with us a month now, a prisoner of war. A guarantee against Alistair's wrath, my father said. It has not seemed to work, because Alistair has shown up at Eshram with an army, and I worry things will not end peaceably. Mathior does not look much like the legends, I have to admit to myself. He is just a boy of 8, and while he is tall and browned from the sun, he does not look as if he eats the flesh of his enemies. He has 2 eyes, and they are a soft brown that is almost as dark as his long braided hair. Although he has been with us for a month, he chooses to wear the clothing of his people, preferring his fur vest and soft suede leggings to the decorated fabrics of my father's court. His hands rest at his waist, as if he is hoping for a dagger to appear there. And he watches the walls of the city intently. The handmaids giggle again.
If he's not a Cyclops, then what is he? One of them asks.
A bastard, suggests another.
I push my needle through my banner. Enough. Mathior is a guest and an honored one.
He is a savage, my princess.
I give her a sharp look and she goes quiet. Of course she falls silent. She would not dare displease Crown Princess Hala of Eshram, sole heir to the throne. Doesn't matter that I'm barely 16. I've never been allowed to be a child. I am the heir first, a marriageable bride second, and a daughter last. For the last few months, ever since my birthday approached, the kingdom has been besieged with suitors from distant, far-flung kingdoms who wish to marry me and help rule Eshram. I know my marriage must be one of convenience and not love, so I have kept all at arm's length and showed interest in none. Even if my girlish heart secretly yearns for one or two of the more handsome, dashing lordlings.
Marriage will be a certain part of my future. To choose otherwise would make the kingdom unstable, because right now, I am the only heir. I have always known that I will be married off for a strong alliance, so I have never allowed myself to dream of love, except in secret. Not that love matters, or marriage. On this day, marriage is the furthest thing from my mind. It is the fate of the kingdom itself I worry over. The walls of the castle shake, and screams echo up from the courtyard, and my next stitch is shaky. I force myself to remain focused, even as a few of my ladies nervously get to their feet, heading for the window. They stare down at the siege below us, and when one of the women pales and returns to her seat next to me, I know it is not going well. Alistair has come for his son. The Cyclope, savage barbarians all of them, have laid siege to the graceful, cultured kingdom of Eshram. I tell myself they are the barbarians, not us. I tell myself that we are far ahead of them in advancements and armor and courtly tactics on the battlefield. We should win handily. But the Eshrami have lost every battle against the Cyclops, and now they are on our doorstep, and I am filled with fear.
Princess?
Lady Tamira retakes her chair next to mine, and her face is white with fear.
They have broken through the gates. Shall we go into hiding?
I swallow hard and force myself to do another calm stitch. No, my father's troops will handle it. I can't retreat. To do so would show that I have no faith in my father to defeat his enemies. If word of that got out, we would be attacked from all sides, even if we were to repel the Cyclops invaders. It does not matter. Fight one enemy or fight them all. I notice Matheor comes to my side. For such a small boy, he's remarkably observant and acts far older than he is. He watches me with dark eyes as I do my best to continue my embroidery, even though my hands are shaking. After a moment, he puts a hand on my shoulder.
It's all right, Hala. My father's going to win this day, but I will tell him of your bravery.
I look at him in surprise, at his tanned face and dark eyes, the long wild hair decorated with feathers and fur. Even though he has been with my people for nearly a month, he refuses to dress like a courtier and prefers to seem a barbarian.
How dare you!
Lady Tamira exclaims, rushing forward to snatch young Matheor's hand from my shoulder.
First of all, she is Princess Hala to you, and you are not allowed to touch her.
She sniffs indignantly at the thought.
But I am a prince, Matheor says, his expression growing childishly stubborn. Why can't I talk to her as if she's my equal?
Because you are a barbarian, Tamira hisses.
She holds her skirts out as if blocking him from my view, and my lips twitch with amusement when Matheor simply crosses his eyes at her.
Your people are strange and crude and are not fit to lick the princess's shoes.
Lady Tamira, I begin again, ready to correct her. Before I can, Matheor speaks up.
It is your people who are the strange ones, Matheor says. Mine are warriors.
He holds himself up proudly to his full 7-year-old height.
And by the end of this day, you will be bowing to me.
My lady-in-waiting squawks indignantly, but before I can step in, the door to my private chambers flies open. The royal guard rushes in, accompanied by Lord Balin, one of my father's close friends and advisors. I jump to my feet, forgetting to be ladylike and calm. Balin's clothes are streaked with blood, and his eyes are wild. He scans the room, and at the sight of Matheor, points a dagger.
There he is, men! Grab the little heathen!
I suspected this might happen, and this is why the barbarian prisoner is in my apartments this day, with my ladies.
I calmly step in front of Mathior, as if this is nothing out of the ordinary, and give Lord Balin a cool look.
What are you doing? Who gave you permission to enter my chambers?
Forgiveness, princess, he tells me breathlessly, even as I shift and hide the Cyclops boy behind my skirts. His hands clutch at them, and I can feel his small form tremble behind me, for all that he's never shown fear before. It reminds me that he is still very much a young child, 9 years younger than me. It might as well be a lifetime. Balin straightens, his face pale.
We are lost, princess. The Cyclops King Alistair has broken through our defenses and slaughtered your father and his guard. They are overtaking the castle.
His voice breaks on a sob.
They cut him down like he was nothing, like he was filth.
His nostrils flare, and an inhuman look crosses his face.
Give me the boy. We can avenge your father and make Alistair pay, but we must be quick.
I stand there in shock. His words hit me like crossbow bolts. Father dead? The castle lost? The Cyclops warriors have won. Our kingdom will be ground beneath the heel of a barbarian usurper. I want to be strong and decisive, to be the queen they need.
My father is dead?
I whisper brokenly. I feel Mathior's small hand clasp mine. He gives me a squeeze, as if comforting me. Balin nods, grief and rage written on his features. Behind him, the royal guard are restless, but also tormented by their failure. They do not lie to me. They have tears in their eyes, all of these men. Their king is dead, and they have failed him.
Give me the boy, Balin says again. We can have vengeance for your father. We will cut his throat and throw his body from the battlements to show Alistair that we are unbroken.
No. Lord Balin looks astonished at my refusal. His face darkens, and he takes a menacing step forward, moving far too close to me for comfort. My ladies, who are not trained to be more than companions, retreat. I stand my ground and hold Mathior behind me.
Give me the boy, he says again. This is a man's matter, not a woman's. You do not know of war. You did not see your father's death under their spears.
My father is dead, I say crisply. And even though I am screaming inside, I sound cool and efficient. And your response is to kill a small boy who should not have been stolen in the first place? We are a kingdom of light and learning. That is a cowardly move, and we are better than that. I sound strong, even if my knees are weak.
Kill him, or be put to the sword yourself, princess. Do you think the Cyclops will have mercy on you, the daughter of their enemy? They will cut you down,
he snarls in my face, so close that I can feel his spittle fleck my skin. Mathior tries to move forward, but I push him behind my full skirts and press closer to my carved chair, so he cannot do something as foolish as trying to save me.
Do not stand in my way.
If my father is dead, I am now the queen. You are my royal guard. I give Balin and his men an imperious look.
Do you go against my wishes? Mathior is an honored guest. He will remain so. I will not let you touch him so long as I live.
Then you will only live for an hour,
snarls Balin. He turns to the royal guard. They look at him, then at me, and drop to a knee, bowing their heads in my direction. Loyal, brave men. I stand a little bit straighter at their allegiance. I know I am right. It is not our way to kill prisoners, especially a small boy who has done nothing wrong save be born to the enemy king. Balin turns his back to me and storms out of the room. I blink rapidly. Everything is happening so fast.
I take a deep, stealing breath as the sounds of battle below grow louder. Matheor's small hand squeezes mine, lending me his strength, and I remember who I am. Eshrem is supposed to be a good place, a cultured kingdom of learning and beauty. We are not murderers, even if we are conquered. Even if I am queen for 10 minutes, I will be the right kind of queen. I turn around and look at the seats scattered about my chamber. Kosira, bring your chair next to mine, I say, indicating the next largest carved seat. Matheor will sit at my side as the guest he is. My ladies bustle into activity, and I sit back down on my chair, now my throne, and ignore the pulse hammering in my throat. I swallow hard and lift my head to address the guard waiting for my orders. If the castle is lost and my father dead, then I would have no more blood shed on this day. Go and give the orders to lay down their weapons. Not all of my father's men need to die for Eshrami pride. I smooth my skirts and gaze upon them as a queen. We will wait here to greet Alistair the Conqueror. I pray that when Alistair puts his sword to my throat to kill me, as he surely will, I will be as composed as I am in this moment. Matheor puts his hand over mine, his skin dark against my milk pale, his hand childish against my larger one. I won't forget, Hala. I give his hand a squeeze and then wait to meet my end.
2. 16 years later. Matheor. I stare at my father's funeral pyre, the flames of it growing higher by the moment. Songs rise into the night, my people singing up to the stars of my father's deeds, of the many bloody battles he fought and won, of how he made the Cyclops a kingdom to be feared, of his conquest of Yashrim with its weakling king and neighboring Adasia, whose citizens threw down their arms the moment they heard the barbarian king had turned his eye their way. On and on I hear songs of Alistair's many feats, some not entirely true, but all glorious and praising of his name. This is a time for fine words in his memory. This is a time to drink and praise him. In the morning there will be kingdoms to govern and my people to lead, but tonight is for him. At least that is how it should be. Already his advisors look to me with questions in their eyes, and I am the one that must give them answers. I rub at the scar over my eye, the symbol of my strength as a warrior. The day I sacrificed my eye to the god Aaron of the Cleaver to prove that I did not need two eyes to be a brutal fighter, that a fierce Cyclope warrior only needs partial sight to ruthlessly slaughter his enemies. It is a tradition as old as time amongst my people, and I submitted willingly. That was the day I became a man, but sometimes the scar itches, even though the eye there has been long gone these 10 years. I lower my eye patch once more and cross my arms, deliberately staring into my father's funeral pyre. I keep my gaze focused, daring the Yashrimi ambassador who skulks at the edges of the celebration to come and demand answers. I will give him answers, at the tip of my spear if he does. But the man has some brains. He gives me worried looks, but does not disturb me as I pay tribute to my father. I celebrate with the others, raising my voice in song and lifting drinking horn after drinking horn in his name. I do not drink from all of them, but the revelers who celebrate my father's life, warriors and widows alike, do not notice. All they know is that they must shout their joy of my father's deeds to the heavens so the gods will hear them. Tomorrow will be a time for mourning, but not tonight. The hours wear on, voices grow hoarse, and the fires grow dim. When the last of the flames have gone out and my father's funeral celebration is complete, I am weary, but pleased. My father has been sent to the gods with great honor. Tired, I toss my furred cloak over my shoulders and leave behind the funeral fires, toward the largest tent in the encampment. Now it is my tent.
"A word, King Mathior?"
I hear a voice whine from behind me. I grit my teeth. I had hoped to wait until tomorrow to answer this. I know what he will ask. I know my answer. I have always known my answer. But I do not have the time or the patience to explain it to him or anyone else. Of course, a king should not have to explain. But warriors and diplomats are very different kinds of people. Diplomats insist on words for everything, even when I would rather shove a spear down their throats. My father would laugh at my sourness. He would tease me and tell me that even the word sparring is still a battle that a king must fight, and it must be approached as seriously as any battlefield combat. My throat aches, and I feel a sad sense of longing that he is not here, that I must take the throne upon his death. I would give 1,000 good horses if he could rule forever. I have always wanted to be king, of course, but never at his expense. I turn and glare at the robed man who follows behind me, scrolls tucked under his arm. "The embers of my father's funeral pyre yet burn," I cautioned the ambassador. "Do you wish me to light a new fire for your funeral?"
"I know this is the wrong moment to approach," the man continues, cringing.
I have reluctant admiration for him because he speaks even though he knows my displeasure.
"King Mathior, one of your kingdoms is in the greatest of unrest."
"Yes, Shrem, I know of it. I know my father ignored it in the last few years for lands with better hunting and more glory. Yeshrem is a placid place, of people who till fields instead of hunt game, of people who cover themselves in layers upon layers of scratchy fabrics instead of soft furs, and love words instead of deeds, of people who hide behind stone walls before their barbarian overlords. They were easy to conquer 16 years ago, my father bragged. I think of their lovely princess, she with the soft hands and the gentle eyes. Dark hair, a full mouth, and a steel-forged spirit. Hala, I have not forgotten her.
"Then you know that your father neglected his lands in the last few seasons,"
the ambassador says bluntly. "Yeshrem's people feel abandoned. They are taxed, and their wealth sent to the Cyclops overlords, but receive nothing but more burdens in return. There is not enough food, because it has all been sold to Adasia to pay taxes. There are riots in the capital, thieves and banditry upon every road, and poachers in every forest. Your border overlords, placed by your father, grow careless and drunk with their power, because he put no boundaries on them, and the people resent the fact that they steal everything, from sheep to firstborn daughters, and claim that it is their right as Cyclopean emissaries."
"Do they now?" I drawl, thinking vaguely of the men at the keeps that have been established as border lords. Not Cyclops warriors. They have two eyes and little battle in their heart for all that they bend the knee for my people. They were chosen to act as ruling lords who remained in one place, as most Cyclope tribes are nomadic. I vaguely remember a few of Yeshrem's lordlings who eagerly bowed their heads and were put in positions of power so long as they would raise no army against my father. I knew Yeshrem had been ignored. As my father's mind grew distant and the disease took more of his health, he turned to the hunt and the old ways. It is not a bad thing to live in such a manner, but a conqueror must be aware of all his kingdoms or they will turn against him. It sounds as if the lordlings have already begun so. The man continues on, an urgent look on his thin face.
You are in danger of losing control of the kingdom, Your Majesty.
I am not anyone's majesty, I tell him. Such titles are another Yeshrimi custom I dislike intensely. I do not mind king, because it is a word that translates no matter the tongue, but speaking of my majesty is foolishness. Call me First Warrior, if you prefer.
First Warrior, the man continues smoothly, trotting behind me as I push back the flap and stride into my private tent. Of course, but you must heed my words. If you wish to stop an uprising of the people, you must do something. As long as there is a princess of the old blood, there will never be rest. Even now, insurgents call her name in the streets and demand that Queen Hala be restored to her throne.
Queen Hala. Queen for an hour, perhaps.
I smile at the thought of her. My memories are clouded by years that have passed, but I remember her braided hair, gleaming like chestnuts, and her skin as pale as a winter sky. The pretty curve of her mouth. I remember how elegant she was, and how kind, how soft her hands, and how pink her lips. She ruined me for all other women with a glimpse, and I was but a boy of 8.
So the people make unreasonable demands. What would you have me do about that? I ask absently, shrugging off my cloak as I near my pallet of furs. My mind is still full of Hala herself, her stiff posture and full skirts. I have dreamed of her for years, imagining laying her down in the furs of my bed and pushing those skirts up to explore what lies underneath. One does not think such things about a princess, but that has never stopped me.
I have a simple solution, the ambassador says.
Things are never simple, but now I am intrigued. I push thoughts of the lovely princess away. I am listening.
Send an assassin, the man tells me bluntly. Take care of the problem. If she is not alive, she cannot take the throne. She has no issue. The royal line of Yashrem dies with her. It is not a pleasant solution, but a neat one.
A necessary one. His voice is full of distaste, and it is clear to me that he doesn't like what he suggests, but he can see no other way out. Such is the life of a diplomat, offering terrible solutions to their king, and hoping someone else will take the blame. I am not surprised that he has offered it. It is custom among many peoples to have rivals murdered and removed quietly. It is not the Cyclopean way, for we prefer to meet on the battlefield and spill blood in the name of Aaron of the Cleaver.
I am not surprised that he has suggested it, but I am surprised at the violent urge that rises inside me. Not to murder Hala, but to murder anyone that suggests such a thing. She is mine. She has always been mine. She will always be mine.
I keep my expression calm and unbuckle my sword belt. It has been a long day, and tomorrow will be busy as well. No one will touch Princess Hala. I have another idea, I tell him. It is an idea I have nurtured for many years in secret, one that I did not dream of pursuing while my father was alive. Now that he is gone and Yashrim is in chaos, the thought has been on my mind. Daily. Hourly.
And who is here to tell me no? I am now first warrior. My word is law. I can do as I like to rule my kingdoms.
First warrior, I must beg you to heed me. Yashrim is a problem, the man continues. We must do something, and we must do it soon. A show of authority is needed, and quickly it is handled.
I remove my bracers, tugging at the leather ties.
How?
And I tell him. When I am done explaining my beautifully simple plan, he stares at me in surprise.
You would do such a thing for your kingdom? For Yashrim and the Cyclops tribes both?
I cannot help but smile. He thinks I do this for Yashrim. Amusing.
I care nothing for Yashrim.
I do this for me, because I am now first warrior. I am king, and I get everything I want.
3. Hala. The early morning light is the best time to read by. I sit in the courtyard of the temple, a volume of Reiki's prayers in my hands. At least, the binding is of Reiki's prayers, but the interior is love poems. Reading for pleasure, especially such daring reading, is forbidden in the temple of the Goddess of Peace. But when peddlers come to the temple, I am able to sneak a purchase of a book or two upon occasion. It's the only treat I allow myself. My cell is the same gray, windowless cell of Reiki's peacekeepers. My braids are done in the manner of the temple guardians.
My gown is the shapeless gray of her priesthood. I follow the rigid guidelines of the clergy.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?